Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 16, 2017. Foreign diplomats in Juba calling on the warring parties to lay down their guns.
My hope is that both the government, opposition and all the South Sudanese will get together to bring about peace in South Sudan so that the international community as a whole, including Japan, could really support that process.
And South Sudanese refugees are benefiting from vocational training in Uganda.
I choose welding. I know that in some time to come, I will at least sustain my life through welding.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Foreign diplomats in South Sudan are asking the warring parties to stop fighting in parts of the country. The ambassadors spoke yesterday following a meeting with the National Dialogue Steering Committee. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
National dialogue can only take place if there is a security in the country, if people feel free to speak their mind. So against the background of the fighting that is still going on, in spite of the unilateral ceasefire that has been declared, there is still some work to be done there. So we pressed upon the steering committee and we pressed upon also on the government to respect the call for a unilateral ceasefire.
That is Geert Gwet, the ambassador from the Netherlands to South Sudan, who summed up what just about every other foreign envoy here is saying, that all warring parties must lay down their weapons to give the national dialogue process a chance to work. Kia Masahiko is the Japanese ambassador to South Sudan.
My hope is that both the government, opposition and all the South Sudanese will get together to bring about peace in South Sudan so that the international community as a whole, including Japan, could really support that process.
Jerome Biswaro, the African Union ambassador to South Sudan, says the AU supports the national dialogue and other initiatives aimed at restoring peace across the country. And Biswaro says all armed opposition groups that emerged after the 2015 peace agreement should also declare a ceasefire to create a conducive atmosphere for the national dialogue.
When we are talking unilateral ceasefire, that also demands other parties also to do the same, to reciprocate. It shouldn't be a one-sided affair.
Biswaro praised the South Sudan government for releasing more than 30 political detainees last week, but called on the officials to release all political detainees so that they can take part in the national dialogue. Betty Achan Ogwaro, a member of the National Dialogues Steering Committee, confirms that some political detainees have not been freed.
They are still political prisoners because they are now being released in phases. So it will be unrealistic for me to say there are no more political prisoners in prison. They are, and the security sector is now releasing them in phases, and they are giving us the names and the numbers.
Ogwaro calls on all South Sudanese to support and participate in the national dialogue. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The new SPLA-IO sector commander for the former Central Equatorial State says his forces have no intention of fighting other groups who have rebelled against the Kiir administration. General Albiros Iyata says he has ordered IO forces loyal to Riek Machar in Equatoria to stop attacking troops loyal to the National Salvation Front. 3 weeks ago, General James Kenyi Loborong defected from the SPLM-IO and was attacked by Machar's forces. Yata calls the attack on Loborong a mistake.
You know, there are crises that have happened, and I want to assure you that we commanders of the Equatoria in the IO, the situation is normal.
Can you tell us what happened? You said there were a crisis. What kind of crisis are you going through?
About a week ago, or about 10 days exactly, or 2 weeks, the defection of Lieutenant General John Kenyi Loborong, the sector commander of Sector 8 of Central Equatoria, to the National Salvation Front. This is what caused the crisis.
When he left, you decided to attack him. Why would you attack him?
There was no intention of attacking him. The intention was to find a venue so that people talk and find out exactly what is the problem. But this is Kamicha came of misunderstanding, but it was not intention of attacking him, you know.
But the shadow governor of SPLM-IO in central Equatoria, that's someone by the name of Matata, he said your forces will pursue Kenny wherever he is. That's a military language. You know, when you pursue someone, it's not in the interest of sitting down to talk to him.
Matata is a governor. He's not a military person. He cannot talk on our behalf as a spokesperson of the military. I was the deputy sector commander of Sector 8, and at the same time, we came out with a resolution of not encountering one another to confirm one another. We need a room for a dialogue so that we sit down.
What is happening now with Kenyi out of the area? What is happening there? Is there peace there? Are your forces friendly with the forces who are with Kenyi?
Our forces are friendly, and we are not enemies with one another. We are fighting the same regime. I see that we work together. The unity of our people is paramount to achieve and sustain the peace that we want in the country.
You are speaking in your capacity as what? I mean, what is your position within the SPLM-IO?
I'm speaking at the capacity of the acting commander of 2nd General Headquarters of the IO in Lasso. This is my assignment given to me after the sector commander left and I was the sector commander. Now I have a new assignment from the commander-in-chief as the acting commander of the 2nd General Headquarters in the Greater Equatoria.
And so your message is you want peace with Kenyi Loborong. You don't want to confront him.
We came out with the resolution that we don't want to confront one another. We have to sit down and dialogue, and if there is anything, we work it out, but not confrontation.
What can you tell us about the latest information you have regarding Pagak? We are getting mixed information coming in that the town has been changing hands. Who is in control of Pagak right now?
What I can say up to now, Pagak is under our control. I've been in Pagak from 2015, 2014. I know the location of Pagak very well. Though I'm not the SPLA-IO spokesperson, but to the best of my knowledge, Pagak is under the control of IO, and we are in a good position.
It was in the hands of the government last week. When did you take the town?
This is the latest I'm talking to you of now as I'm speaking to you. Pagak is under control of the IO.
When did they take control of the town or the village?
The town has been taken now for the last 2 days.
That's General Albiros Iyata, SPLA-IO acting commander for the former Central Equatoria State. He spoke with me from Lasso in Yei River State on Tuesday. Kenya's opposition leader says he will go to the Supreme Court to challenge the results of last week's presidential election in which incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta was declared the winner. Raila Odinga also said the opposition will, quote, preach peace but uphold the right to assembly and protest. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Since Friday, when Kenya's Electoral Commission announced President Uhuru Kenyatta had been re-elected, opposition candidate Raila Odinga has been telling supporters to stay tuned for his NASA coalition's next steps. He ended the suspense Wednesday when he announced the coalition will take its case of what he called a stolen election to the Supreme Court, despite previous statements to the contrary.
By going to court, we are not legitimizing misplaced calls as some observers for us to concede, but are seeking to give to those who braved the long lines in the morning chill and hot afternoon on Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. Mothers with their children tied on their backs, the sick, people with disabilities, old and young, a chance to be heard.
Odinga asserts the voting system was hacked. These allegations led him to begin his announcement Wednesday by giving the title of his statement, Kenyans Say No to Computer-Generated Leaders. University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora believes going to court is the best move for Odinga and NASA.
I think this will be the best option because then, first of all, it deals with the anxiety in the country, the tension it will ease. And, you know, 14 or so days when he's in the court is enough for people to heal, for people to act out of thinking and not out of emotions. So it's like you buy time even for grief, you know, to you to go through grief. But it's also much better because then you put your case forward in an environment that allows you to do so systematically.
Odinga justified his previous refusals to consider court action by referencing what he called the government's determination to silence all voices by attempting to shut down two Kenyan rights groups in recent days, and said NASA will now be laying out their evidence before the whole world via the court process. The acting Secretary for the Interior, Fred Matiang'i, has ordered a 90-day suspension of legal action against the rights groups. The action came after police and revenue officials attempted to raid the African Center for Open Governance offices early Wednesday, and the NGO Coordination Board deregistered the Kenya Human Rights Commission on Tuesday. Odinga also left the door open to future demonstrations.
We will preach peace, and as we have done so. But we will uphold our rights to assemble and protest. We shall hold vigils, moments of silence, beat drums, and do everything else to peacefully draw attention to the gross electoral injustices being meted on our country and demand redress.
The Electoral Commission says Kenyatta won the election with 54.3% of the vote, beating Odinga's 44.8%. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The death toll in Sierra Leone's mudslide has risen to about 400, with another 600 still missing. More heavy rain is expected in the area, raising fears of more mudslides down the slopes of Mount Sugarloaf in Freetown. While workers continue to dig through the rubble from Monday's disaster, there is growing health risk from hundreds of unburied bodies. Idalia Amalia is emergency coordinator for Catholic Relief Services in Sierra Leone. From Freetown, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the organization's efforts.
We are supporting in two areas. One is with burial management. We just got done from a meeting with the Infection Protection Control Unit at the Ministry of Health. We're going to be supporting the burial teams that are going to be burying the bodies that are in desperate need to be buried. There's about 200 right now that are at a city morgue that need to be buried starting tomorrow. It's starting to become a public health hazard, these bodies decomposing at the city morgue and at the city hospital. So we're working on fueling ambulances, supporting the grave diggers, supporting the burial teams to start burying the bodies starting tomorrow and Friday. That's the declaration by the president that the bodies need to be identified today by family members and those that aren't to be buried at the city cemeteries.
What is happening at the site of the tragedy? Are you offering help to the survivors there?
Yes. So CRS is providing immediate assistance. We've had teams doing assessments jointly with the government, different NGOs providing basic needs, helping with food, distributing mattresses, water, and also coordinating very closely with the government. Also, there's some need for counseling support services. People are very traumatized. People have lost all their family members. It happened early in the morning, so whole families have been lost in the mud. So a lot of counseling is needed. A lot of people are very traumatized and in complete shock.
What do those who survived still need? I know you're supplying help, but you're on the scene, so what other aid should be given?
It is rainy season right now, and we're expecting more rain, so getting people just the basic needs is key, mattresses, and again, counseling services.
What can you tell me about the survivors of the mudslide in Freetown?
As an American myself, I am inspired by the strength of the people here. They have suffered a lot from civil war to Ebola epidemic to floods a couple years ago. And the people here are so strong. They're banding together. It's a big Muslim community here, but also Christian. So Christians and Muslims are banding together to support their community, to try to pull out people. They're still hopeful for survivors. So I think what I want to just stress, the strength and the inspiration of the people here, that regardless that they've lost everything, their whole house, whole families, they're still waking up and working together to survive from this tragedy. And they keep saying we're strong like the cotton tree. It's a symbol of hope, of strength. It's where the slaves went after they were freed. And that's what they're saying. We'll be strong and have faith like the cotton tree here. It's inspiring, the strength of the people that have lost everything but still have a smile on their face, wake up in the morning and are there to try to see what they can do to help their fellow Sierra Leoneans.
Idalia Amaya is the deputy head of program for the humanitarian agency Catholic Relief Services. From Freetown, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, local farmers are fighting for armyworm in South Sudan. Find out how when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are feeling anxious, what can you do to calm down?
Do what I like to do best, read the Bible, watch movies that would educate me, and then read books as well.
You are in such a kind of situation, you have to calm down, don't take any action, just relax, sit down. It can even take you to a situation where you can lay down your ribs to have a relaxation so that at least your memories and your positive thinking will come back to you.
I usually like to listen to music when I'm anxious. I listen to music that will make me feel free.
I encourage myself. Sometimes I put music on. I play, dance alone in my room. And that gives me the excitement to move on because every situation is not permanent. It will change the next day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of farmers in Imatong State have found a way to combat the fall armyworm, which has destroyed thousands of crops across the state. The head of the group says farmers are using a mixture of ash and tree leaves and soap to fight the fall armyworms. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
Farmers weed vegetables here at a nearly 3-acre Pidaya farm in Iluhum village. Robert Lokang, founder of the farmers group, sprays eggplant, tomatoes, onions, and cabbages with a locally made concoction to kill the armyworm. Lokang says last season his farm lost more than 20,000 South Sudanese pounds after the armyworm destroyed the crops in the nursery bed and a variety of vegetables.
They're eating the leaf. And other insects also affecting from the root. And others are also rotten the fruits, which already out. The one which already to be harvested, they're also eating them.
Lokang says he mixes proportionate quantities of ash, powdered soap, and neem tree leaves, and sometimes paper to kill the pest. And he says it works.
When we collect the neem leaves, almost one bucket. Then we soften or we grind, with the stone. And after softened properly, then we bring the ashes, we mix, and we bring some omo, then we mix, we cover properly, we tie it properly in the bucket. Then after 2 days, then we spray in our fields.
Besides spraying the vegetables, Lokang's group also continually weeds the crops to detract armyworms from invading the crops. Armyworms were first detected in South Sudan in June. The pest, which came from America, was first identified in Western Africa last year. The armyworm attacks maize, cotton, sorghum, and vegetable crops. Lokang says he has been educating other farmers about his natural insecticide, but admits it is only effective on his small farms. Another farmer, Mary Peter, says Lokang's method of killing the armyworm is not reliable, especially when crops are still very young. Speaking in Arabic, she complains that mixing the concoction and spraying it manually is tedious. but admits it is effective. Peter says this is the fourth planting that she is seeing some changes after they have used neem and red pepper. After they have grown bigger, she said, they now use ashes, as you can see her vegetable crops growing well. UN and government officials say regular insecticide do not work on the armyworm. They say large plantations and surrounding areas must be disinfected to make sure the worm will not return. Awelo Obale, Deputy Director of Mechanization at the Imotongi State Agriculture Ministry, says Lokang's method is cost-effective since there is no other immediate solution to control the spread of armyworms.
We encourage farmers to do crop husbandry, that is cultural practices, to limit or to control these armyworms. Not only other armyworms, but other insects also. We encourage cultural operation, which is very important. We have had that in Ifotu, Payam, and in Kudo, Payam, and Kiala, Payam. This is where we had the armyworms destroying crops.
Fortunately, neem trees are plentiful in the area, so Obale says farmers should take advantage of Lokang's simple method to control the spread of the armyworm. UN Food and Agriculture Organization officials say they will introduce new crop varieties in Imotongi State, which they believe will be resistant to armyworms and other pests. Gatanga Michael is a liaison officer with Global Agriculture Innovation and Solutions, which is working with the FAO to introduce new crop varieties to the area. FAO officials arrived in Tori today to talk to farmers about the new seeds of improved crop varieties.
These are the new bridge seeds, and it's a new variety. Then we wanted to test also on this environment. We see then how long and how strong it will be resistant to the disinfections, like these different insects that are affecting the crops to farmers. And then in case if we see like it will be also not resistant to the this insect's infection, then from there we shall see like what could be the way forward to assist farmers also try to treat this kind of armyworms away from their crops.
The new crop varieties include maize, rice, cowpeas, groundnuts, and beans. South Sudan Agriculture Minister Adigo Onyoti said recently that 166,000 hectares could be ruined by armyworms in the country. He says the government has no resources to fight the pests. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Around 150 South Sudanese refugees are attending various courses through vocational training in northern Uganda's Adjumani district. The Roman Catholic Church in the area say the training will equip refugees with skills and empower them to become self-sufficient. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Adjumani.
The refugees are acquiring skills such as bricklaying, carpentry, catering, tailoring, and welding at the Junior Express Vocational Training School. Refugees like Lemmy David says he is happy to have the opportunity.
I choose welding. I know that in some time to come, I will at least sustain my life through welding.
David says he began taking a course in Juba in motor vehicle maintenance and repair, but it was interrupted by fighting that broke out in July last year. Ditsilo Kigama, who used to be a trader in South Sudan, is now training to become a driver. Gama says he needs new skills to support his wife and child in the camp.
I want to get experience through qualifications in order to satisfy my needs or to satisfy the wants of my family.
Nathalie Mazira, one of more than 30 young refugee girls admitted to the vocational school, says after graduating from a tailoring course, she hopes to set up her own small business.
If there is no income, it is so hard to sustain life. So family also requires it. Then even my personal needs also requires money. As being a girl, there are a lot of things that are needed.
David says he also plans to go into business with a little help from Caritas, the humanitarian arm of the Roman Catholic Church that funds the program.
If Caritas, through my request or a group request, they gave us at least a capital to start that business
and then we shall set up our own business.
Taban James, a carpentry student at the training school, says he has already made plans to start making beds and chairs using his father's tools.
My father was a builder and as well he was a carpenter. So I knew that the materials that he's having, I'm the one going to utilize it. That's why I choose carpentry, so that the materials, even if the characters has not given enough, we shall still utilize that one of his.
Gama says the prospects are good for him to rebuild his life after it was shattered when he was forced to flee his native Bagiri County in Imotong State due to fighting.
The experience I got when I qualified and I got my permit, it is the time when I'll be happy when I succeeded successfully in my training.
There is a good market for furniture in South Sudanese refugee camps, especially for beds, chairs and tables, according to James, who says he is eager to get started.
At camp, there are many works to be done as carpentry is concerned. So I think I can do something practical and then earn my life.
Mazira also believes her training course is very useful, but wishes it was longer than 4 months.
A real tailor must take something of 3 years. At least less should be 2.5 or else 1. That's 4 months is not enough to acquire all the skills and the knowledge.
Most of the thousands of South Sudanese youth living in refugee camps across Uganda are unemployed, so they cannot support themselves or help support their families. David Gama, Mazira James and others at the Junior Express Vocational Training School say they are grateful to Caritas for giving them the opportunity to become self-reliant. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
That story by Peter Piku from Adjumani brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Homeless by Kenyan Boys Choir. We've been listening to the Kenyan Boys Choir with the song Homeless. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Would like to hear your feedback on our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com, or you can find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ziyo yami.